Blog Talk Radio.
Delving past the headlines, sorting through the media bias, exposing the propaganda, and challenging you to use your brain. It's time to tap into the truth.
Yes, that's right, ladies and gentlemen. It is indeed time to tap into the truth. Welcome to today's broadcast. Hope you're having a great day wherever you are and whatever you may be doing. Today, I wanted to talk about a few things, but before we get too far into it, I wanted to make sure that everybody out there is all right and doing all right. I have some regular listeners to the show that happen to be in some areas of the country that have been hit by tornadoes. I want to send up special thoughts and prayers to those people. You know who you are. Hope everybody is all right and doing well. The folks I've heard from, I know, are okay. Not everybody seems to be in that position, however. So for those of you that believe in prayer and do that kind of thing, I do hope that you will say a little prayer for everyone involved. Now, today, there was a lot of different various reports going on about the situation in Ferguson, Missouri. And I wanted to discuss that in referencing to last Sunday's show. I ended up being shortchanged in time because it was important enough to let the guest have what they had to say. Started off Sunday's show where we talked for an hour with Danny Page, who happens to be an independent candidate for the U.S. Senate, attempting to garner the seat currently occupied by Lamar Alexander. And we ran a little long with him, and then we ended up being a little bit late getting to Dr. Sharon Schutz, who is founder of the Lady Patriots News and Opinion website and has expanded yet further into a social media community site called Lady Patriots Space, which is not limited to just the ladies, just FYI. And then I didn't have as much time as I would have liked to have had to go into my discussion about Ferguson, Missouri, and the Michael Brown shooting and how things are progressing there. But there was a lot of news that came out that kind of exemplified exactly why I was saying the things I have been saying since its onset. Now, if anybody's interested in calling and voicing your opinion in regards to what has transpired, you are more than welcome to do so. I will open up the phone lines. You can give us a call at area code 347-426-3550, or you can give me a call toll-free at 888-287-5313, and I'll be more than happy to let you have your say. We want to keep everything reasonably clean. Viewpoints that are different than my own are welcome. The idea is to have a discussion. But until I start getting some phone calls, or if nobody's actually interested in calling, then I'm just going to go down my take and we'll go from there. But we're also going to talk about some of the reports that came out today. Now, from the very beginning, my point since this started was that it was way too early to jump to any conclusions. Said the same thing during the Trayvon Martin case, and I think we all knew that this was going to go kind of that same route. And so far, it basically has. With a few minor exceptions, and that being that as of today, there are a total of a dozen witnesses that have backed up the version of the police officer that was involved in the shooting. That this young man had, in fact, come towards the car, kept him from opening his car door. He tried to get out of the car again on a second time, and he, at that point, shoved the door closed again, reached inside the window. There was a struggle that took place inside. Now, this is the police officer's account. This has been information that has been withheld from the general public for the majority of the time since this shooting occurred. So for a lot of folks, this may be the first time you've heard this account, and I understand that. So let me take the proper time to set the scene. If you already know this, if you've already heard it, that's fine. If you don't want to hear it, be patient. There are other people that would like to hear it. Alas, it's reasonable conversations and patience. Patience on the part of the people that have gotten involved with this incident since its inception would have been ideal. But at this point, it hasn't happened. Now, picking up where I left off with the officer's version of events, this gentleman, this, according to the mainstream media, was nothing but a big teddy bear. Well, this particular teddy bear had just finished robbing a convenience store, stole some cigars, and for whatever reason, heaven help me, I don't understand it, the Reverend Al Sharpton seems to think that there's a difference between shoplifting and theft. Now, legally speaking, the charges he would face, theft under a certain amount of money, yeah, there's some differences there. But whether you want to just settle for calling it shoplifting and somehow say that's okay, or if you want to just say, all right, the man robbed the convenience store along with a friend, it happened. He was in a different mindset. It was one where he just roughed up the store manager. You know, not bad. You know, he just pushed him around a little bit, and then he intimidated him. And obviously, he was still in that same mode, according to the version that the officer is stating. The version that, again, I tell you, as of today, there are a dozen eyewitnesses now collaborating what the officer has said. He tried to open his door because he was confronting the two, not because he immediately thought that they were suspects in this robbery at the convenience store, but because they were going down the middle of the road in an unsafe fashion. They were walking in the middle of the road. He hollered out at him. He tried to leave his vehicle. Michael Brown shut the door, did not let him out of his car. Then as he started to walk away again, he tries to get out of his vehicle again. And once again, the door is closed. He's not allowed in. He reaches inside the vehicle. At that point, the story goes that a struggle over the firearm ensued. The officer stated that Mr. Michael, Mr. Teenager, 18, all right, 18, that he's reached for the firearm, that he tried to take the firearm away, that he was going after the gun. Now, if that's the case, that's horrific enough as it is. But he said he felt the gun being moved around and pointed towards him, so he pushed down. And when he felt that occur, that's when the gun went off for the first time. Inside of the vehicle, inside the police cruiser, the gun went off. Once the gun went off, that is when the teen in question keeps saying that because it's ridiculous that the media refers to him as a teen in this case, but I'll get back to that. Point, the young man, the 18-year-old, took off running. Police officer gets out as he is trained to pursue at this point in time, gets out of the vehicle and demands him to stop. But instead of stopping, he turns back around and then he starts charging the officer. It is at that point that the officer begins firing. The officer, according to reports that are finally being released, these reports are coming to us. You can find them all over the web. All the news outlets can be considered even remotely reputable. have this available now. Everything from Fox News to CNN, even ABC and CBS and NBC are putting their own little spin on it. I haven't seen it on MSNBC yet. Would be surprised if they do it, since they seem to be the Al Sharpton network. According to reports that are being released, the officer in question was badly beaten. He had broken bones. Now, I'm actually in the process of trying to pull up a link to a story, and we'll sit here and we will look at the Fox News, which says that the Missouri cop was badly beaten before shooting Michael Brown. Wilson, who is the Ferguson police officer in question, who fatally shot Michael Brown, touched off more than a week of demonstrations, right? But he so happens that he suffered severe facial injuries, including an orbital fracture, and was nearly beaten unconscious by Brown moments before firing his gun. Now, the assistant police chief took him to the hospital, his face swollen, and it was clear to everyone there that he had been beaten severely. Now, according to a well-placed source, a source that has not yet been named, Wilson was coming off of another case in the neighborhood on August 9th when he ordered Michael Brown and his friend Dorian Johnson to stop walking in the middle of the road because they were obstructing traffic. The confrontation quickly escalated into physical violence. They ignored him, and the officer started to get out of the car to tell them to move. They shoved him right back into the vehicle, and that's when Michael Brown leans in and starts beating Officer Wilson in the head and the face. The source also claimed that there is solid proof. You can't see my air quotes, but the source claims there is solid proof that there was a struggle between Brown and Wilson for the policeman's firearm, resulting in the gun going off, although it is still unclear at this stage who pulled the trigger. Brown started to walk away, according to the account, prompting Wilson to draw his gun and order him to freeze, which I thought they only did that on television, but regardless. Brown raised his hands in the air and turned around saying, "What are you going to do, shoot me?" At that point, the source told FoxNews.com that the 6'4", 292-pound Brown charged Wilson, prompting the officer to fire at least six shots at him, including the fatal bullets that penetrated the top of Brown's skull. At least that's according to the independent autopsy conducted by the request of the Brown family. Wilson suffered a fractured eye socket and was left dazed by the initial confrontation. He is now traumatized, scared for his life and his family, injured and terrified that the grand jury, which began hearing evidence on Wednesday, will make some kind of example out of him. Anger over Trayvon, perhaps? The source also said the dashboard and body cameras, which might have recorded crucial evidence, have been ordered by Ferguson Police Chief Thomas Jackson, but had only recently arrived and had not yet been deployed. So they didn't have these available, these critical pieces of evidence. Now, a spokesman for the St. Louis County Police Department, citing the ongoing investigation, declined today to say whether Wilson required medical treatment following the altercation. Edward McGee, spokesman for St. Louis County Prosecutor Robert McAuliffe, said that the office will not disclose the nature of the evidence it will reveal to the grand jury. We'll present every piece of evidence we have, witness statements, etc., to the grand jury, and we do not release any evidence or talk about evidence on the case. Now, the article continues on from there, but it's irrelevant to the attack at this point, and it's irrelevant to the violence at this point, with the exception of the fact that this information has been released. reports also came out today that Dorian Johnson has recounted his version of the stories. Now, I haven't been able to independently verify that, but I saw it all over the social media boards, and of course, you know, that doesn't make it proof, but that report was circulating out there. It was out there, and if it is true, and I'm using the qualifier if, those of you who want to jump on and say, oh, you're just pro this, pro that. I am pro police, by the way. I think most police officers are great. I think they're doing the best they can in a very tough job. They have one of the toughest jobs on the planet. But I do think there's a few bad cops here and there that give the profession a bad name. I think there's a general mistrust because of a few bad apples. I think we encounter them on a daily basis. I think everybody in the listening audience can think of at least one time that they've had an encounter with a police officer that was less than ideal. So, there was also an incident that occurred today that the recanting of the story by Brown's friend was being reported in a local radio station. In fact, let me grab this. According to a local St. Louis radio station, they started reporting early today that Dorian Johnson had recanted his prior media statements and now asserts that he and Mike Brown did indeed engage in a physical confrontation with Officer Darren Wilson. Now, they were saying that as a consequence of this, that most likely the local prosecutors would be saying that it's doubtful charges would be filed. Ultimately, this still comes down to what the grand jury is going to decide, because all this evidence is going to be taken to the grand jury. Let's make this clear. At this point, there is no question that in the effort for justice, we all have to be real careful about what we accept as truth and what we accept as being anything but. The prosecutors have accepted eyewitness testimony that said exactly the same thing when it came to Brown's side of this argument. And keep in mind, Michael Brown is dead. Why does he have a side in this? The people that were left behind, this is where the tragedy lies. The people living in this community, the community of Ferguson, Missouri, the people that are there in dealing with the nightly violence, or at least almost nightly violence. I don't think a night has went by without some type of altercation. Some nights have been a little better than others, but I don't think a single night has transpired where there hasn't been an issue of some kind. Some nights far worse than others. The people that are having to deal with that are the ones facing tragedy. But justice is hard, justice is cruel. And justice is not a matter of opinion, but we have to discover the truth before we can find justice. We have to find out if the 12 or so eyewitnesses that were reported out there today are telling the truth. We have to find out if it's true that Mr. Darian, Mr. Brown's friend, who was with him during this incident, who was involved in the convenience store shoplifting event as well, we have to find out if he's actually recanted and is now telling the story that is more along the lines of the police officers. I mean, in a lot of ways, we are seeing almost an identical situation to the Trayvon Martin case, with the exception that this time, it actually was a white guy that pulled the trigger. Just keep in mind, everybody, when they first jumped on Trayvon, thought Zimmerman was a white guy. He wasn't. He was Hispanic. Now this is neither here nor there, and I really need to get away from that, because when I do get that, it kind of feels like I'm doing the finger pointing, and I'm past that. I don't want any more finger pointing. I don't want any more finger pointing on the show. I don't want any more finger pointing from the callers. I want us to have a discussion about the facts. And the truth still stands that facts are still coming out. We don't have all of them. Again, there were early reports we heard that the Justice Department, a.k.a. Eric Holder, a.k.a. Barack Hussein Obama, better known as the Occupier on this show, there was actually orders given to suppress information. They didn't want the video of Mr. Brown committing his shoplifting incident. They didn't want that video released. It wasn't until after the federal government was stepping in and embarrassing the local police that they decided to release it. Then there was anger and outrage about the release of the video. Oh, this is character assassination. How is this character assassination? What you have is something that goes to show the mindset of this young adult. And please, mainstream media, stop calling him a teenager. Stop calling him a teen. Technically, yes, he was, because he was 18. All throughout the mainstream media, you will find in an incident when it comes to talking about 18-year-olds, they've decided to address them as adults. Legally, 18-year-olds are treated like adults. So why? Why does the mainstream media in this case choose to refer to him as a teenager? If you haven't thought about that, if you haven't asked that question, now's the time. Now, for those of you who have, well, I think it's pretty clear. Once again, we're dealing with the narrative. And how do you know there is a narrative involved here? Clear and simple. There are literally dozens of murders that take place in places like Chicago and Detroit and Washington, D.C. and Los Angeles and New York, literally dozens of murders that take place daily. There are weekends where we'll lose up to 50 young children in places like Chicago over the course of a weekend. But it's not talked about a whole lot unless you're linking in with conservative media outlets. It's not talked about because it's mainly black-on-black violence, usually having to do with drugs or illegal weapons or, in a lot of cases, both. So we don't talk about that. That's not important. See, the rest of us, we wouldn't understand because it's not our culture. Mainstream media, along with certain liberal-minded individuals, want to pretend like because of 100 different reasons, the environment you've grown up in, the lack of options, the lack of availability of upward mobility for these people, that somehow that makes it okay. Really, all you're doing is providing excuses for people not to make an effort. Excuses for people not to make their own life better and step back and blame it on somebody or something else. That's all you're doing. You're helping to perpetuate the myth that they don't have an option, that they don't have a choice, that they can't make things any better. They're stuck. So it's okay to accept violence, to accept selling drugs, to accept selling weapons, to accept staying where you're at because you can't do any better. That's the mindset. That's the narrative. This is how the black community has been kept in the Democratic fence, Keep voting for us because we understand you. We get you. We will send you free stuff every so often, and we'll occasionally show up and pretend like we care. That's how they have kept the black community believing in the falsehood of institutionalized racism. This is that ideal situation because you are dealing in the community of Ferguson, Missouri, just outside of St. Louis, a place where they can quickly mobilize large numbers of people that are selling the hate. It's a place where outsiders can easily get to and manipulate the situation on the ground. Again, we have seen over and over and over again, so far in this situation, that the people that are coming in and doing this destruction and tearing up the town are mostly outsiders. And it makes sense, doesn't it? You don't want to go tear up your own place. Let's go someplace where we really don't care what happens or what's left standing. Let's go someplace and we're going to riot, we're going to loot, tear stuff up and steal stuff because the Reverend Al Sharpton says it's okay that we do that as long as we're angry black people who have been discriminated against and treated so badly for so long. When the last time I checked, none of these people are old enough to have actually been a slave. And excuse me, some of them may have experienced some racism during the course of their lives. They may have. I'm not saying they haven't. I'm not suggesting that racism doesn't still exist, but I am telling you that for the most part, institutionalized racism within the confines of this country and its mechanisms to the government is pretty much all but gone. It has to be. You've got too many people looking over their shoulders, too many people quickly waiting to file a lawsuit. You've got Al Sharpton at the drop of a hat waiting to go make things work. You've got Jesse Jackson rolling into this town, and at the very least, somebody caught on to it when Jesse Jackson asked for donations. He got booed. At that point, they should have ran him out of town on a rail because that's the kind of thing that points to exactly what these people are about. They're looking to race bait and create issues and problems where none exist. If you really cared about this issue, if you really care about what was happening in Ferguson, Missouri, you should have stayed out. Al, you should have talked about it on your show, but stayed the hell out of the way and let the people of Ferguson figure it out. New Black Panther Party, you should have stayed the hell out and let the citizens of Ferguson, Missouri figure it out. Federal government, hello Justice Department, hello Eric Holder, you should have stayed the hell out and let the locals conduct their investigation. Looting should not be taking place. Looting does not serve justice. Looting is not demonstrating. Looting is not making your point or taking a stand. It is breaking private property and destroying other people's lives. And you are never justified in doing that. There is not a right way or a wrong way to loot. Looting serves justice. When? Never. But I'm also willing to bet that the majority of people that are involved in the looting, not only are they not from Ferguson, but I'd say most of them don't give a rat's ass about Michael Brown. I'd say even some of them probably don't even know what they're even doing there for. Somebody else said, hey, come on, we'll go have some fun. It'll be great. Meanwhile, you have politicians posturing. You have different people shuffling in and shuffling out. It's asinine that this has been allowed to happen the way that it has. Now, one good thing that may come out of this is maybe some level of unity between liberals and conservatives, finally, on the concept of militarization of the police. Ultimately, what we have to keep in mind is that the military cannot be the police, and the police should not be the military, because the military fights the enemy of the state. The police serve and protect the people. And when the people are forced to become, when the police are forced to become the military, or the military is forced to become the police, then more often than not, the people become an enemy of the state. It doesn't work. The mindset's wrong. We need police officers that are going to do the job. Now, I still reserve judgment. All the facts are not out, and we're not going to know it until a trial starts if the grand jury decides to go forward. But right now, at this moment, with what's being reported, it looks like the officer involved in the shooting didn't do anything wrong. But there may still be something that we don't know yet. And here's the deal. If, for whatever reason, Michael Brown was trying to surrender at the time that he was shot and killed, then this police officer not only should be charged, but he should be convicted and he should go to prison, because that is still murder, and police officers have to be held to a higher standard. I have every respect for every police officer out there, but you have to understand, you have the toughest job that exists when it comes down to policing the American people, honoring everyone's constitutional and civil rights, and protecting yourself and innocence. It's tough. It's hard. It's nearly impossible. But that is why it takes a special breed of people to do it. You have to be held to a higher standard. You have to be. Because the minute you stop holding yourself accountable, the minute that we, the people, stop holding you accountable, is the minute we lose the republic. Because the police have the weapons. They have the tactics. They have the capabilities. And they have the badges. They have the government backing them. They are another entity of the government. And they can put all kinds of difficulty on an individual citizen. So you have to be held to a higher standard, and you have to honor your oath to serve and protect. So if this officer did something wrong, he has to be held accountable for it. I don't equivocate on that. If the only thing that Mike Brown did was shoplift some cigars from that convenience store, that doesn't deserve to be executed in the street, which is what happened in that case. But if, as the officer claims and as these 12 eyewitnesses that are being reported are stating, backing up what he has said, that's what happened, and Mike Brown charged him, and he had already been assaulted and beaten, then he had little choice but to fire, and he had little choice but to continue to fire until the threat was neutralized. He wasn't looking to kill. Police officers are not trained to kill. Police officers are trained to stop, to neutralize. They want to take them alive if they can. They want them to face charges. But that option is not always on the table. This police officer was obviously not the best of shots, but this was also a big man, and he was a man, an 18-year-old man, big, strong, powerful, young, but not a teenager, not exempt from his own responsibility for his actions. And if he charged him in that fashion, especially after having assaulted him already, then that police officer did nothing wrong. But right now, that's all still just if. It's conjecture. We know how it should play out. Now, if you're on the side of, let's just kill all the police, like the new Black Panther Party, then there's no situation that ends in Ferguson, Missouri, that you're happy with. If I was a citizen in Ferguson, I would stand up right now and I would demand all these outsiders leave. I would start neighborhood watches and I would be making sure that everybody that's not a part of the community is out of town before sundown. If I was in charge of law enforcement at that point in time, I'd be running checkpoints and I would be making sure that everybody from out of town is gone before sundown. That's what's going to stop the violence, because I don't believe that the people of Ferguson, Missouri are the ones out here causing these issues. Now, have the police handled this as well as they could? Probably not. Violence, anger, and then outside agitators, it's a recipe for bad news. But the police still have a job to do, and that is to try and protect the property and the lives of innocent people. So they have to show a presence. Does the presence have to be as forceful as what they've done? Probably not. But if these outside agitators have been doing things like, instigating, agging on the police to take these actions, then if they're reacting to something that someone in the crowd is doing, then what choice did they have? Innocent people are going to get caught up in that when the tear gas starts flying, and some people are going to get arrested who probably shouldn't, because you're in a place that you shouldn't be. And you should listen to instructions from police officers. And when the police officer is telling you to do something that's not right, still listen to the instructions, do what you're supposed to do, and then settle it in court afterwards. That's what reasonable, thoughtful people do. Now, I will grant you, sometimes it is so hard in the moment when somebody's doing something that you know is so wrong, that they know is so wrong, that they will even tell you to your face that they know it's wrong. Just like, again, an incident that Danny Page mentioned in Sunday's broadcast when we were talking about the militarization of the police. He was telling us about an incident where he was actually accosted because he had a firearm on him. And when he was pulled over, he immediately, along with his driver's license, put his concealed carry permit in with the information. And the cop went nuts. Now, the gun wasn't out, he wasn't brandished, it didn't even have a round in the chamber. Had a completely legitimate and lawful concealed carry permit from the state of Tennessee, which is where he was at. And the concealed carry in the state of Tennessee is a little more stringent than in a lot of other places that have concealed carry, which is why most places that have concealed carry automatically recognize the Tennessee concealed carry as being legitimate there. They still might insist that you follow a few rules a little differently. And we've had this discussion in previous episodes where we talked about stupid gun laws with Master Gunsmith, Mr. Cody Stockton. The long and the short still comes down to getting these outsiders out of the way so that the community of Ferguson, Missouri, can come together and can heal. And in the meanwhile, let the parents of this young man grieve. I mean, I give straight up props to these parents, because they have stood in the face of violence. And they have stood out and called for people not to go loot. This is not what Michael would have wanted. Don't do this. We just want justice for our son. they lost their 18-year-old son. And whether it was through his own actions or through negligence from the police officer, that's got to be sorted out. But that's all they wanted. My heart goes out to these two. Because even if they knew that their 18-year-old son was involved with some criminal activities, they also had to have hope that he would outgrow it. They also had to believe that this was their son, and their son was not this guy that deserved to be gunned down in the middle of the street. So it's going to be hard for them. And again, that's why I do not stand in judgment. That's why I'm not going to sit here and talk about the fact that he was obviously a criminal thug. Maybe he was. Certainly seems to be plenty of indications of that based on pictures on his Facebook page and everything else. But this isn't about him. He's not on trial. If he had been apprehended, had been charged, we would have never heard this story, because then there would have been enough evidence that he either would have been convicted or he would have walked away scot-free, and there was no story here. But again, we see the narrative, and the narrative must be played out. The mainstream media must change their own rules to make the story fit. Again, another parallel to the Trayvon Martin case, and I already mentioned the fact that Mr. Zimmerman, not pure Caucasian. He had Hispanic blood. He looked Hispanic. He did charity work with black youth in the community. Man just wanted to stay for neighborhood based on all the outward appearances. And for the first time that I'm aware of, the national mainstream media referred to Mr. Zimmerman, once the truth about his Hispanic heritage came out, as a white Hispanic. I've never heard that term expressed before through the media until that case. It was incumbent upon them in the action of spreading the narrative that the word white still be associated with George Zimmerman. Because with a name like George Zimmerman, how can you be anything but the whitest guy in freaking Florida? So when they were going to be honest in their journalism, it required to admit that he had some Hispanic heritage. But they still had to tell the narrative. So they tell the narrative, and the narrative becomes white Hispanic. So now they're in town, and they're telling the narrative. And the narrative is about how oppressed the black community has been. This is just another case of racism in America. America's bad. America deserves to be punished. That's the narrative. Now, when exactly our media became the propaganda machine for the leftists that want to destroy all that is good about America, I'm not entirely certain. But there's no question that that is the case now. There is no question. No one can look at how these stories are reported. No one can look at it with an unbiased eye and not see the bias in them. Now, I'm coming off of what was a rather rough weekend, but it started out really well for me. I unfortunately got very, very sick not long after the broadcast Sunday, and it put me out of commission, basically, for the better part of 2 days. Today's really the first day that I've been back up and at it. And I'm very happy to be so. But what started out the weekend really well is on Saturday, I got the opportunity to attend the first annual banquet for the Mamie Carmichael School Organization. And this is a new nonprofit that basically has been put together here locally, focusing on Oliver Springs primarily, for those of you who are familiar with the area. and Mamie Carmichael in particular, they're trying to salvage the heritage of what was then called, and still being referred to because that's what it was called then, colored schools in the area. There actually was one in Oliver Springs, and there is a bunch of empty land sitting where it was now. The city had actually talked about trying to do something with the property and turning it into a park. Even the local youth leagues had put together some fundraising for it at one point because they thought that they could get a gymnasium built in the park and be able to move all of their youth league activities there instead of trying to share the gym between the local elementary and junior high schools. That did not work out. It fell through. The city wasn't able to do their part because of financial issues, and they couldn't raise enough money to do it. Well, now the Mamie Carmichael School Organization is in the process of doing fundraising so that they can now fix up this park and bring it back to being a jewel of the community, and at the same time honoring the heritage of the school and the work that was done there before. Now, I have mentioned before that I work for a food manufacturing company on a full-time basis when I am not doing my on-air thing. The company that I work for is based out of Oliver Springs. So again, if you're a local listener, you probably can figure out who I'm talking about pretty quickly. Now, I'm part of the management team there, and we were approached by the folks with Mamie Carmichael School Organization about being involved with doing some fundraising to help them raise the funds to get this project started. After we took a look at their info and realized, number one, that they were completely legit, and number two, that this is something that will be important to the community, it didn't take long at all for us to decide to get involved. And we did. The company bought a table at the fundraising event. We had a guest speaker, Mr. Inky Johnson. We had both a silent and a live auction there. Had entertainment being provided by a band called The Connection. And then we also had, as part of the musical entertainment, Oliver Springs' own Janelle Author, who some of you probably recognize that name. If you watched American Idol last season, she made it to the top five. We also had local football hero Jermaine Copeland make an appearance. Wasn't scheduled ahead of time, but he found out that the event was taking place and he showed up. Now, for those of you who are familiar with UT football, you probably know Inky Johnson, and you most definitely know Jermaine Copeland. It was a great night. It was inspirational. Inky Johnson is a tremendous speaker, by the way. If you ever get an opportunity to hear Inky Johnson, do it. So not only do we buy a table for the company, but we also donated a gift basket. Now, what we manufacture primarily is fudge. Sounds really exciting, doesn't it? Trust me, when you're in the confections business and you are a wholesale manufacturer, you are competing with other people that are trying to sell their candies and confections. It is a cutthroat business, and it is a minefield waiting to blow up on you. So, trust me, it's more involved than what it would sound like. But then isn't everyone's job. Okay, so I'll digress from that point, and let's move forward with it. It was a great night. It was a great auction. We donated the basket. It would have easily retailed, depending on what part of the country you're in, anywhere from $150 all the way up to $300 easily. I have seen gift baskets with less stuff in it with a retail price of more than that on it. Hence, a lot of products from our shop, things that we order in besides our own stuff, but it had our own stuff in it as well. It was really nice. Now, It was initially part of the silent auction, but then the winner of the basket, when it became clear who was going to win the basket in the silent auction, then turned around and donated it to the live auction. And I'm very happy to be able to say that in the live auction, it actually went to $400. So when you put together the silent auction total that the person got and then was very generous and turned around and did it, we broke over $400, and that was tremendous. Between that, the silent auction items that my boss's wife won and they eventually paid for, and buying the table, you know, all of that was fun. Because we got to have an enjoyable evening. But the most enjoyable part of it was, is here was a night where black and white, and there were some Hispanic folks in there too, and I'm pretty sure I saw some Oriental people. I wasn't looking close enough, and actually, it's not a big deal either way. But the point is, we were all pulled together for the single purpose of honoring our mutual heritage in our community and doing something to honor that while improving the community now. We were engaged and we were involved, so I have seen firsthand in the past week the power of togetherness. That's why it's so very disappointing to see the type of violence that's taking place in Ferguson, Missouri. Now, we here in the South constantly get hammered by Northern folks about how racist we are. We're backwards, we're hayseed, and I reckon everybody from Tennessee is still a hillbilly. We're still running around barefoot with a little twig of hay in our mouths and our straw hats with names like Jethro eating out of big old metal bowls because we can't afford dishes. It's not like that if you've never had the pleasure of coming down. If you're not familiar with how things are here in East Tennessee, I highly recommend you come visit. Because not only are we heading towards fall, so the Great Smoky Mountains will be really awesome with the leaf changings coming up, but find out what we're really like in our communities. I got to see this togetherness because we had a mutual goal. And it wasn't so much about raising the money or how much money we raised. We were proud to be able to be part of that. So I want to give kudos because, you know, I didn't make those final decisions. I was for it, but I didn't make the final decisions. I'm in the management team. I'm not the head honcho. I'm high enough in there, I can make some stuff happen. But I still don't get the final say on things, on a lot of things. Well, there's some things I actually do, but yeah. Those of you who have been management and corporations understand this. Those of you who haven't probably don't, but the point is this, just this past week, I have seen the beauty of people coming together. So here's my call and my final take as of the moment. And I'm very disappointed that nobody called. As you can see, I have no problem sitting here and spilling out whatever's on my mind. I'm very disappointed nobody called in today to say anything in regards to it. But no matter what transpires between individuals, rushing to judgment is never a good thing. And looting never serves justice. And that's it. Now, I'm going to move on to the next topic in a little bit. But if you want to call in and still make a comment about the Ferguson situation and the new things that came out now, or if you just want to call in and one time say, hands up, don't shoot, and then hang up, that's fine too. Again, the number to call in is area code 347-426-3550. Love to have you call. Love to hear your point of view, your take on it. Because, again, the idea is to start a discussion and to get some level of understanding. And that's what we've got to do. That's the whole idea of tap into the truth. I'm challenging you to use your brain. Let's stop giving those knee-jerk reactions to the emotional stuff. And we've got to stop finger-pointing. We have got to realize that, yes, things are bad now, but we're never going to get them back to good by sitting back and blaming the other side. It's time to move forward and get some freaking solutions. We have common ground. Now, I know you're sick of hearing me saying it, but I'm going to keep saying it because it's a freaking truth. We all, as human beings, have far more in common than we have that separates us. Period. Again, area code 347-426-3550, or you can give me a quick call on the toll-free line if that's what you feel like you need to do at 888-287-5313. And you're more than welcome to make your comments still about the Ferguson, Missouri situation. It's hopefully moving away from the violent standpoint. That's going to be it. I'm going to take a quick break, and when I come back, we're going to shift gears and start talking about James Foley and a little bit about Obama's little speech today that he made in response to it. So stay with me. We'll be right back. All right, ladies and gentlemen, how many of you folks have been looking for a social media community where you could be comfortable to talk about your political views, whether you're conservative, liberal, what have you, just as long as you actually love the country? The only thing that's asked of you is to be a patriot, not an economic patriot. Not a socialist patriot, but a patriot. If you've been looking for that, let me ask you to check out LadyPatriotSpace.com. The site is up and going brand new again. It's been around for a little while, but it's underwent some changes, and it has basically started all anew. Created by my friend and Lady Patriot, Dr. Sharon Schutz. This site is live now and accepting new memberships. So please go to www.ladypatriotspace.com and sign up today. I'm already there, and I hope to see you there too. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are back. Thanks for staying with us. I wanted to go ahead and point out to you that the music that you hear during the break here, all of our little bumper music, is part of the service called Magnatune. Magnatune allows me to pay a fee, and then I have access to a lot of great independent artists who are trying to make a living off of their music without the aid of a major label. I'm kind of partial to that idea. You've probably heard me make that statement before, but I think it's absolutely phenomenal and fantastic what these folks are doing. They're helping out independent artists, and that idea just appeals to me. But the upside of that also, from a podcast point of view, is that all the music is completely legally podcast safe. All you have to do is go in and decide what level you're going at for your podcast, because your level of payment is different whether you're doing something professionally or if you're doing it as a non-commercial entity. A little bit cheaper for the non-commercials if you're just doing it for the fun. If you're not making any money off of your podcasting, there you go. But if you are making money off your podcasting, then that's a little different, and you'll pay a little bit more. But that's okay, too, because guess what? The money's going to help the artist. Of course, you know, Magnitude's taking a little off the top, too. They're going to do that. But regardless, all the music from Magnitude and a lot of great independent artists. Also, I'd like to take this opportunity to remind you that you can find a lot of information at tapintothetruth.com, spelled just like the show is, T-A-P-P, intothetruth.com. Also remind you that in the event that you have stumbled across this podcast and would prefer to listen to it in a different format, say you like iTunes or would rather listen to Stitcher, which is absolutely phenomenal for your cell phone now because of how it downloads the individual shows, you can completely lose your internet connection. But once you've started the show is going to play until you stop it. And that's not too hard to do either. You can pause and you can start right up where you left off, and it's fantastic. Also, tune in. Tune in is also a fabulous way to check on your internet radio. So you can find the show at iTunes, Stitcher.com, at TuneIn.com. And, of course, you can find it right here in our archive section once the show's over. So if you're catching on to the show, if you're listening live and you're catching us and you wanted to go back and hear another part of the show, or you want to go back and hear it later, or you want to download it, or you want to share it, you can do it from the same link that we're at right now. It'll be easy enough to do. It'll be archived. So please feel free. Share the good word. Tap Into the Truth, a household name out there, and well, I'll thank you for it. All right, now let's get into the part of the show that I've actually kind of been waiting to get to, because this I'm a little more passionate about. And I think you probably heard the passion in my voice earlier, and I certainly hope you did. If not, it comes from me trying to subdue it, because I don't want to get on here and just start yelling into the microphone, which is what I feel like doing when we talk about some of these topics. I want to get a big blowhorn and start yelling into the microphone. Only I sound a little like Al Sharpton when I do that. That kind of scares me. So another reason why I don't want to do it. Because number one, I know that sometimes getting on here and calling people names and just getting emotional, it appeals to a lot of folks. You know, it's entertaining. It's exciting. It gets you fired up. But I don't think it helps move the conversation, and I want to move the conversation. So let's talk about it, shall we? We are discussing now American photojournalist James Foley. Really, really made big news when State Department authenticated, admitted that the video was real. Members of ISIS posted a video showing the beheading of Mr. Foley. They had him read a prepared statement where he denounced Obama and the administration and our military and addressed his brother, asking his brother to think about his choices. What are you doing? How did you make this? You killed me by dropping bombs on people in Iraq. Because his brother's in the Air Force. If you haven't seen or heard the video or haven't heard anybody talking about it. Now, I've made the conscious choice not to play the audio on the air. I'm not going to. Because the first part they had him say, obviously propaganda. The part that the executioner was saying, again, obviously propaganda, stating how for every one of them that we kill, they will kill 10 of us, blah, blah, blah. The same old tired, ruthless, jihadist crap. They're going to drown America in the blood of their citizens. The part that's really got people freaked out, though, other than the fact that they actually watched a man get beheaded, if you watched the video. And this, of course, isn't the first beheading that we've seen in video. Plus, it was not the first journalist to be caught up in this. The fact that the executioner and the narrator had a British accent. That's got a lot of folks on high alert. It has people asking the question if the person behind the mask that did this execution, if he's not one of the Gitmo detainees that had recently been released, or certainly, at the very least, a previous Gitmo detainee who has been released. Can you imagine what would happen if we were to find out that this guy was, in fact, one of these five that was released for Bodal? I mean, what would the administrations have to say about that? I'm sure there would be some flimsy excuse about how it's George Bush's fault. What else could it be? That's why things are as bad in Iraq as they are now, right? I mean, have you heard this? The Obama excuse that he's not the one that made the decision? Despite the fact that in a multitude of times, especially at fundraising events and even on his own Twitter feed, he said, I told you I'd end the war in Iraq, and I have. He did it. Now, if there was already plans to do the full withdrawal, then he needs to be honest about that and say, you know what, I didn't do that. Sorry, Democratic base that hates all military and all action that our government does in a military fashion. That wasn't really me. So, I mean, isn't that what he's saying? Well, that's not what I did. I did not make that decision, and it's Bush's fault. Well, if it's Bush's fault that we don't have military in Iraq right now, then doesn't that mean that it was actually Bush that ended the war? Why didn't you tell that to your fundraising partners? Now, I saw a multitude of reaction throughout the various social media outlets, you know, Facebook, Twitter, TeaPartyCommunity.com. Didn't see much reaction on the LadyPatriotSpace.com. And like I mentioned before, during my little commercial, and I would highly advise anybody to go there because it's not a strictly conservative place. We just ask you to love America. And I say we because I'm a little more involved with the site now than in previous activities. I think it'll be really great once it gets up and going. But there's not a lot of activity going on there because in the process of rebuilding that site. But at TeaPartyCommunity.com, I saw a guy that was going on about how James Foley actually had been very supportive of the jihadists, how he had been in Syria reporting on how the jihadists were doing there. That is ISIS, too, by the way. ISIS or ISIL or whatever else you want to call them, they're still the same folks. They think that they are running a caliphate. They believe that the time has come that their Islamic State exists and it's going to be worldwide before they're done. Make no mistake about it. Now, I asked Dr. Sharon Schutz Sunday when she was on the air with us because they have been writing about this at LadyPatriots.com. If this isn't, in fact, really just a continuation of the civil war between Sunni and Shia, and it's just a matter right now that they're looking to unify so that they'll go after weaker targets eliminate the numbers of the people that would, that could potentially stand together against them. The old adage of divide and conquer. We're going to take these people out because we know right now, you over here, you're not going to say anything about us taking these folks out. Then when we're done with them, we're going to move on to the next group. And then when we're done with them, we're going to move on to the next group. And then we're going to come back to you because you don't believe the way we do exactly. I mean, the closest thing we have in Christianity is denominational things. You know, if you're not the same denomination, there's at least one or two major sticking points of what makes my branch of Christianity better than yours. Well, there's essentially two major divides within Islam, and that's Shiite and Sunni. And the two sides have fought each other before. They have a tendency of fighting amongst themselves to try and decide which one is correct. Allah will only bless the ones who are correct. But it's really brought the issue home because this video made the rounds and it's made all the talking points. Everybody is talking about it. The occupier, a.k.a. Barack Hussein Obama, gave a very tempered and very wistful speech in response to it today, in which he actually lied a couple of times, just FYI, in case you missed it, because he said that no faith teaches the killing of innocent. It's a lie. It's a lie. Barack knows the Quran well enough to know that Islam does in fact teach killing of innocents. Now, does that mean that all Muslims follow that particular tenet? Obviously not. But the problem is, until there's sufficient numbers, we don't know who does and who doesn't. Because they know the secret to expanding their form of Islam is to remain quiet and peaceful within the new nations in which they are invading. And they are invading, even if they immigrate legally, the plan is invasion. Again, are all Muslims involved with this? No, obviously not. We can't tell who is and who isn't. So we need to keep an eye on all of them as best we can without violating legitimate civil liberties. You know, once they become citizens, the rules change. Or at least they should. As a constitutionalist, I have to tell you that I would be tempted to maybe make an exception. But the problem is, you just can't. You can't make those kinds of exceptions because it's bad. It's bad precedent. And it takes away the right to complain when the IRS targets conservative groups and Tea Party groups if you're not willing to stand up for the constitutional rights of the people that are on the other side. I don't have to like it. In fact, lots of times I don't like it. But we have to stand by it. The Constitution is still the single greatest document. Really, the Declaration of Independence is probably the single greatest document. The Constitution is the single greatest document limiting government. And yes, that's the whole idea, limit the government. Now, as I was mentioning earlier before I went off the primrose path here a little bit, James Foley has been accused of being sympathetic to these people. I don't know. I haven't seen enough of James Foley's reporting to be able to tell you. I'm sure over the course of the next several days, I probably will. I will be looking into it. But like I said, I came across that today. And the guy was very passionate, and he sounded as if he knew it. But then his only source material back to it is a site that he himself is promoting. So that leads me to wonder, what other sources do you have? Show me his actual Twitter feed, and all that being neither here nor there, because the bottom line is he was still an American. He was an American doing the job of journalism, and he was used as a propaganda tool and then beheaded in front of a camera. There were production values. This event was produced. They had the little symbol, logo. Yeah, that's the word I'm looking for. Easy for me to say. They had the logo up in the corner. They had a prepared speech for Foley to give, talking about how terrible America is and how we're really the ones who killed him. And then they gave their own little speech. The executioner gave this just wonderful speech if you happen to be a jihadist. Lots of times at the beginning of the show, I'll welcome you to the show and tell you that I hope you're having a great day. And then lots of times I will make an exception, unless you're engaged in criminal activity or global jihad. Make no mistake about it, jihad is global. ISIS is everywhere. And whether you're calling them ISIS or ISIL or whatever this third name is that I've heard referenced once or twice, but not enough for it to stick in my head. Technically, I hear that all three of them are technically wrong, but the third one is probably the closest to being right. And it figures it's the one I don't know right off the top of my head, but these people are committed. The idea of James Foley being beheaded in this fashion and the video being put up is to drive the point home, and that is that ISIS are evil, evil people. Today, we saw images in, you know, I say we, if you're not paying attention to the same web places that I am, or if you're not actually going to tap into the Truth Facebook page or to my personal Facebook page at Tim Tapp, then maybe you haven't seen it. But there's images of in the back of a freaking truck, 5 or 6 women, obviously Christians, being rounded up and taken. They're being sold as sex slaves. And this picture was taken in Mosul, Iraq. There's what looks like a small child on top of the cab of this little white truck. Well, I guess it's actually probably not that little of a truck based on the size of the truck bed. The angle is kind of hard to tell a whole lot about the truck. But there's already a group of men coming in around it. And these women look terrified. And the whole idea here is these women are being sold as sex slaves in areas that are controlled by ISIS. I mean, I see this, and I can't believe that so many people in our media are turning a blind eye to this horrible truth. While, of course, the adage of out of sight, out of mind probably applies, the bottom line is it just doesn't fit the narrative. It just doesn't fit the narrative. Meanwhile, in order to tell the story of the narrative, let's go to Ferguson and scream racism while we ignore real oppression. Now, I've changed my profile picture to the Arabic letter N. I've seen a lot of other folks do it similar. They've got different versions of it. I did it, so hopefully a few people would ask me about it, and a lot of folks have. And I'm very grateful for the opportunity to explain exactly what it is. As the Arabic letter N, it's being branded on Christians in all the areas that ISIS is operational in, which is far larger than just Syria and northern Iraq, which is what the media keeps telling us they're limited to. They're operating within Jordan. They're right up to the Saudi Arabia border. They are operating across the Iranian border now. They have operational control in a lot of those areas but they are at least operating within those boundaries. They're spreading. Right now, we're waiting to hear if Barack Hussein Obama, a.k.a. the occupier, is going to bother to get off his duff and authorize more airstrikes trying to help prevent a certain dam from falling into the hands of ISIS. You have Kurdish fighters trying to push back ISIS in their region, and they're getting very little in the way of assistance. There is real oppression of Christians going on right now anywhere that ISIS is operating. These people have proven themselves to be beyond brutal, to be beyond animalist. I mean, to call them an animal is actually a horrible misnomer because it's just not true. Because, you see, animals typically don't hide behind children to protect themselves. The folks with ISIS, just like the people of Hamas, are doing exactly that. They're big, brave, and bold when they think you can't touch them, when they think you can't trace them. But this is more of these shock and awe tactics, the likes of which, with the level of brutality, we haven't seen since the days of Genghis Khan. The idea is to scare everyone so bad that no one will dare stand in opposition. They're coming for you. They're coming for me. They have 15-year-olds shouting passionately that they are coming to destroy all those who stand opposed to Islam, all those who stand opposed to the caliphate. I am not opposed to any person that wants to live in peace. I don't have an issue with that. But when somebody tells me that I must convert to a certain faith or die, I have a problem with that. One of the greatest freedoms that we enjoy here in the United States, one of the reasons we are the big Satan, one of the reasons that all Americans must be dealt with, is our religious freedom. James Foley was an unfortunate victim of this violence, of this shock and awe campaign, of this attempt to try and make weak-kneed and lily-livered liberals quake in their boots. And Obama's little speech today, there was no strong affirmations that we're going to commit ourselves to stopping the spread of this radicalized version of crap. There was no strong affirmations that justice would be served, that James Foley would be avenged. And I'm not necessarily saying that that level of vitriol should have been there, but where's the strength? Where's the power? Where's the forcefulness? If you are going to pretend to be the president of the United States, at least occasionally, get off your duff and do your job. At the very least, Prime Minister Cameron had the decency when this video came out and they heard the British accent. He had the decency to come off of vacation, come back and address things. Not Barack. Nope. Martha's Vineyard's too important. He works too hard at fundraising to take time off to be the president. Takes me back to something I know if you're a regular listener, you've heard me say before, but for crying out loud, you begged for this job. Please, to the best of your ability, try to do it. I know your base is part of the Blame America crowd. I know your base is part of the We Would Rather Be a Socialist Nation crowd. I know that your base is part of the people who wouldn't understand that you cannot solve the world's problems by building a little campfire, smoking some pot, and singing Kumbaya. You can't hug it out with people who only want to kill you because you're not one of them. You don't understand that mentality. That's why you want to badmouth Israel. That's why you want to handcuff Israel when they go to defend herself. You're not willing to admit the fact that there are literally thousands of Arabs that live within Israel's borders, and they get good-paying jobs, and they get to vote, and they get to bask under the protection of the strength that is Israel. No, no, no. You'd rather whine and feel bad for the humanitarian tragedy that is the Palestinian people, a people that technically don't actually exist. Now, the people are there, but they're not Palestinians. I don't want to get hung up on that right now, though. I want you to stay with me on the fact that these people are being used as cannon fodder and PR against the Israelis. Oh, we're Hamas, and we're going to go over here, and we're going to launch rockets at Israel, which we know they're going to retaliate. Where are we going to do this from? Are we going to go out to a open field where it's clear who your target is and who you should be shooting at? No. We're going to go into a UN school, which, by the way, you can't possibly tell me the UN doesn't know Hamas is coming in and setting up rockets. You tell me that one time, okay, maybe I can believe that's possible. One time you didn't know they did it. You tell me that two times, I'm starting to get a little suspicious that maybe somebody there should have known. You tell me that three or more times, and I'm going to tell you, you are a complete incompetent or you are a bald-faced liar. And in either way, you need to get out of my face and you need to let Israel blow up those schools. Okay, let's go into this hospital. We're going to shoot rockets from there. And then act so surprised. Why is Israel blowing up our hospitals? Because if they don't, senior psychopath, you're just going to keep blowing up innocent Israelis and innocent Arabs that live in Israel too. But you see, they don't care. They don't care about the people they're supposed to be protecting. They were elected by roughly 40% of the vote, elected to be the authority. It's the people of Gaza, no matter what you want to call them, that are really suffering in that scenario. But Hamas doesn't care. In fact, Hamas is known for firing on members of the former PLO, the former governing body that was supposed to be overseeing the people of Gaza and the West Bank, or as you probably ought to refer to it, Judea. Oh, but the Arabs don't want you to call it that. Why? Well, where do you get the word Judea from? Jew? See, if we know our history, if we understand what's transpired there, then we would know that you probably shouldn't be feeling bad for Hamas. Nothing wrong with feeling bad for the people of Gaza. Because, again, most of them didn't even pick Hamas. Most of them feel like they don't have a voice, and most of them just wish to Allah or God or little baby Buddha that the fighting would stop and they could get along with their neighbors. All Israel wants to do is live in peace. And anybody that says differently than that needs to explain to me, how is it then that every opportunity for a ceasefire, Israel is willing to take it as long as they feel like they can be safe? And why it is that every time the ceasefires are violated, or every time that after the ceasefire has expired, the first shots are all coming from Hamas? Explain to me how the side that's not shooting first and not violating the ceasefires is really the one secretly behind it. Are you going to try and give me some crazy conspiracy theory that it's really the Israelis going over there pretending to be Hamas and shooting rockets over? And I know I've heard people say that, by the way. There are some people that believe that. Now, I am a defender of the tinfoil hat crowd. I have a tinfoil hat or two of my own, actually. And we've discussed some of those before. I love a good conspiracy theory. I find them entertaining. I don't believe all of them, but I find most of them very entertaining. I loved Jesse Ventura's conspiracy theory TV show, not because I think he got to a lot of deep-seated truth that people found out, but again, because it was fun to find out what he was going to drag out next. Even though I am on record, and you can find the show, you can go back a little bit over at Stitcher or at TuneIn or at iTunes, or you can track it down on Spreaker. I did a show titled Jesse Ventura is an Ass. And he really is. Okay, the things that he did, the little lawsuit, and, you know, not letting it go. Chris Kyle was a real, honest-to-goodness American hero who didn't even name Jesse Ventura in his book. But it's okay. If you have a beef, you and him, mano a mano, and you're just trying to clear your good name, then you did the right thing. Do the lawsuit. File the lawsuit. See it through to the end. Should the standards be so much higher in a defamation suit for a public figure than it is for a regular person? Really? I don't think so. So, yeah. And the fact that you won when the standards are set so high, although I hear there's a lot of legal trickery that went on, right on for you. You wanted to see it through to the end, and it was still about the principle and about clearing your good name. Fine, Jesse, but the minute you won, the instant you had the decision in your hand, you should have then asked that the court forgive it or sign it all back over, because this was coming from the estate. And while everybody was talking about the book sales and the money from the book, Chris Kyle had the money from the sale of the books going to a completely different fund. It was going to a charity for wounded warriors. This widow and her children, who are now without their father because Chris Kyle was shot in cold blood at a shooting range by a mentally disturbed individual, whom, again, great conspiracy theories, a lot of folks claim was actually sent there to kill him, that it was an assassination because they were afraid he was going to reveal classified information in an upcoming book. Now, once it's done, let the widow and the children keep their money, Mr. Ventura. And don't give me any whining about how much your legal fees were, because, first of all, I think you're probably well off enough. If you're not, then you mishandled your money, and there's a personal responsibility issue there. You're well off enough, or at least you should be, that you can afford to pay for those lawyers, because you got your name cleared. That was strictly an ass move. Not real sure, now that I'm sitting here, why I wandered down this particular primrose path. But the point being, that ISIS is very real. They're a very real threat to America. And right now, because of the response they got from Barack Hussein Obama, a.k.a. the occupier, they smell weakness. Now, we've heard time and time again of the fondness of the Muslim Brotherhood that Obama has. We've all heard the stories that Barack never actually converted away from Islam. Maybe that's true, maybe it isn't. We've all heard that Barack Obama is soft on the Muslim Brotherhood, mostly because they're out there doing the things that he wishes he could do. Now, I don't know what his intentions are. I don't know his heart, but here's what I do know. When Barack Obama was first elected, assuming he ever was, I'm convinced he did not win the last election, just throwing it out there. I do believe it's conceivable, but now I'm led to question whether or not he won the first one or not. I don't know. It's certainly conceivable. And I'm willing to concede that he was the president for that term. From the time that he took office, I was hopeful, because we've seen it before, I was hopeful that this man would get into the process of governing and realize it's not like it is when you're out stumping on the campaign trail, that there are certain realities to the world that you can't just brush over or whitewash or pretend like they're not real. I wanted to believe with all of my heart that this man legitimately believed his leftist Marxist ideas were a good thing. Overexposure to the academia world can lead somebody askew with things like this. And I wanted to believe that that's what he really thought. But the reason that he thought these things and wanted to institute these policies is because he really wanted to make things better. That he really wanted to make America a better place. I wanted to believe that he loved America and Americans. I wanted to believe that he was naive because he hadn't done much in the way of working in a real world company situation. He'd never been in the private sector where results are not only expected but required. What he had been doing was community organizing and teaching the Constitution. He'd been in academia. He was raised by Muslims and communists. He was taught to hate the imperialistic nature of America. An imperialistic nature that I'm not willing to concede is actually even factual, but it's part of the big lie that spread throughout the world when you're not an American. You can travel around the globe and there are a ton of countries, especially throughout Africa and the Middle East, that will tell you, because they honestly believe they've never been taught any different and they've never been exposed to the truth, that we are an imperialistic society, that we are all gluttons and that we're all godless heathens, which even if you happen to be Christian or some other faith that is still God-based, can't think of any right offhand, but I know there's a couple. Even if you're one of those, then technically in their mind's eye, since most of them are Muslims, then you're still a godless heathen because only Allah is the true God. Only Allah will tell you how you should live. It is okay to lie to the infidels. It is okay to kill the infidels. It is okay to tax the infidels when they want to live in Muslim lands, even if they refuse to convert, as long as they pay their tax. But you do not have to tax them. You can go ahead and kill them. It's okay, they're infidels, insignificant. If they will not convert to the truth that is Islam, submit to the truth that is the teachings of Muhammad, then they are nothing. You do not have to honor your word. You don't have to honor treaties. You don't have to honor contracts. You can kill them. You can enslave their women and children. You can take their property because they are not worthy of property. And all this you can do in the name of Allah. We've got ISIS flags flying inside the United States on front porches from New Jersey to Stockton, California, and several places in between. Yet Barack Obama's response to the beheading of an American journalist who was there, presumably providing a sympathetic point of view in the reporting to the people that killed him. The response is, this will not be tolerated. Sounded almost like a whimper, a little sniffle. You're not going to scare us, new people. You're bad. And you're not going to scare us because we're not afraid of you. Marie, hold my umbrella, please. How did we get here? We've talked about it several times. We know quite a bit of what led us to this point. Americans have had their education pulled from them through public schools' lack of emphasis on historical fact. We've had laziness rewarded through social programs and the will to improve yourself crushed because suddenly you go from the public school to a university and suddenly they expect you to know things, but you're still supposed to know their version of the things that you're supposed to know. And suddenly it's hard. I don't think I'm going to graduate unless I can find a way to cheat or I start dating a professor. I should get a scholarship because I'm me. Well, what are you doing to earn that scholarship? Had a conversation with an employee not too long ago. We were literally within an eyelash of having to let him go, and he's a longtime employee, which is part of why we were so upset with him over his lack of performance recently. And not only did he refuse to acknowledge that he had had a lack of performance up until the point where he started coming up with excuses, but he actually tried to convince me and the other manager that was conducting the sit-down that he, in fact, was worthy of a raise. What have you done to deserve this raise, we asked. Well, I asked. Believe it or not, I actually hate being a hard-ass. But sometimes you have to be, especially when you're the management. I don't like it. I much rather use the more flies with honey approach because it's worked well for me in the past. And I've had people, when I was in quick service management, I had tons of folks that would work three times harder for me just because they knew I would get in trouble if we didn't reach certain speed of service levels. Then they were willing to work for the hard-ass managers who came in and demanded stuff and yelled at them and went on and blah, blah. Now, both forms of management are completely legitimate. Completely legitimate. But in the grand scheme of things, I prefer the more flies with honey than vinegar approach because I think it works better as long as you walk that line. And that line, of course, being that you don't let them walk all over you. They do still have to understand and respect the fact that you're in charge when it comes down to it. The fact that I want to treat you like an adult should give you reason to want to behave like an adult. But we have a ton of folks in this country now that think it's just enough to show up. And again, that's part of the problem. That's part of why we are where we are at. I should get a raise just because I've been here for another year. Raises are based on performance. What have you done this past year that's demonstrated that you've stepped up, that you have done more for the company? Because we have to pay other employees too. And some of them have earned a raise, and we have to balance between keeping the lights turned on and buying more ingredients, which ingredients are expensive in the confectionery world in particular right now, because we're talking about dairy in the form of butter, and we're talking about other ingredients, and I can't go too far into this list without violating my confidentiality agreement, so I'm going to stop there. I haven't revealed anything that's a secret. But these ingredients are expensive. We have to buy enough of it to make the product. We don't get to buy it after we've been paid. We don't get paid until after we deliver the product, so cash flow has to keep going. We have to maintain the equipment. There's a ton of overhead involved with running a business of any sort that manufactures anything, something I wouldn't expect the folks on the left to understand because they've never done that kind of thing. They don't even pay for the lemons for their lemonade stands. They're gifted via federal grants. So we've gotten to the point where we have a weak president because he's from the party of Kumbaya. Well, you see, they hate us because they don't have what we have. So we should give them some, and then we should give them a hug because it's a product of their environment, and it is all our fault because we're America and they're not. So let's have a moment where we come together. Well, what about when we've tried that before? Well, that's never happened. Are you sure? Why, yes, I am sure. How is it that you're sure? Because you obviously don't know your history. You obviously don't know what has transpired. You obviously are trying to treat the rest of us like mushrooms, feeding us crap and keeping us in the dark. That is what the left does to the American people. And unfortunately, we're so far down the road of poor education. And it's not the teacher's fault. Don't you dare try to get teachers mad at me for this statement. Because they have to teach the curriculum. And heaven help the ones that have Common Core now, because they've got to teach stuff that I wonder if even they really understand. I've seen some of these Common Core math problems that have been used as illustrations. And it is absolutely mind-boggling the fact that they want to make simple subtraction so convoluted and so difficult that there is no way on earth that you could ever grasp that and then manage to maneuver your way up to something like calculus. You're never going to get to calculus if you have to do this meandering Common Core math stuff. So teachers have it hard. Teachers are doing the best they can. I'm not cracking on teachers. When I talk about our educational system, I'm talking about what started at the collegiate level when all these lefties started becoming professors and started taking the squishy little minds of American youth and turning them all into commies, or at least that was their goal. And then they gradually started sending out these youthful young people who got their degrees in education into the public schools. And then in the public schools, they started doing the same thing. The indoctrination was there. That's part of why we're where we are, because nobody knows their history. Nobody knows the history of others, and nobody cares because we're too busy talking about Kim Kardashian, Lady Gaga, what some referee has said about the Washington Redskins, which, by the way, that was another big sports-related story that has the political correctness crap all over it, and we'll probably talk about that on a different broadcast. I know most of you probably heard about it. We are inside the last 9 minutes of today's broadcast. So if anybody does want to call in, you're running out of time, and I'd love to take a call on either topic if you want to discuss it. That's area code 347-426-3550, or you can give us a call toll-free at 888-287-5313, and I will take your call, and I'll let you have your say, but remember now, time is of the essence. So far, nobody's made it past the call screening because everybody's wanted to rant and rave and use a bunch of profanity, and I don't want a lot of profanity on the show. In fact, I feel like kicking myself every time I use the word ass, which I have done a few times in this broadcast, and if you've heard the show before, you know I typically don't even go that far. But there are certain cases where it becomes necessary, like talking about Jesse Ventura. Who, by the way, I'm not coming at as a Jesse Ventura hater. I just hate what he did in this case. So here, with a little less than 8 minutes left, phone lines are still open. But it brings us back to how these two different stories are related. We suddenly have new life into the story of the threat that is the caliphate. The caliphate's real. The caliphate is something that we should fear or should embrace. So that's the message. Be it stand up to Genghis Khan or join the Mongols. It is submit to Islam or be crucified as a Christian. Have the letter N branded on your body, and then as the Nazarene that you are, be executed in some fashion befitting the infidel. There are various reports from less reputable organizations that do news, although a lot of it is more opinion-based. And I'll tell you, I throw a lot of opinion out here. I want to delve past the headlines to get to the heart of the matter. I tell you that in the intro. Because the heart of the matter is emotional. The heart of the matter is about seeing past the fluff, getting past the media bias, getting past the propaganda, and seeing the truth of the situation. And the truth of this situation is simple. They're targeting Americans any chance they get. James Foley had been a prisoner for a while before this beheading took place. But as shocking as this beheading is, and as shocking as this video was, if you're among the people who've seen it, you know what I'm talking about. What's more shocking to me is the response, or lack of response, that Barack Obama gave in his speech today. At this point, I know it shouldn't shock me anymore. It shouldn't be a surprise. I don't believe there's such a thing as unintended consequences when it comes to laws being passed anymore. I don't believe. We have lived through the age of unintended consequences. We now know what consequences are, and we know that how we word a piece of legislation, we know what all the ramifications are, and they vote to pass it anyway because, according to Mimi Pelosi, that's how we find out what's in the bill. You know, we've got to pass the bill. Well, once that bill becomes law, once it's signed, then it's a little late for us to find out what's in it because we've got to live with it regardless, unless we can repeal it or defund its ability to be enforced, which the House of Representatives has that power and authority, and I wish Speaker John Boehner would grow the cojones and actually start defunding some of these things that he can't change legislatively. That's why the House was given that power constitutionally, so that no one branch can become more powerful than the other, and no one house of the Congress can be more powerful than the other. The House is the house of the people. It's the closest to the people. That's why there are so many representatives there, so that more voices can be represented. That's why the purse strings are there. And they need to start pulling the purse strings to get this government back under its constitutional limitations. Americans need to be worried about ISIS, because while it's over there for now, we've seen plenty of signs that it's already here, too. There are cells in the United States. People wouldn't be flying an ISIS flag if they didn't intend on raising that flag at some point. It's not just a political statement, and there's nothing cool about being part of a brutal group of people that thinks it's okay to kill anybody that's not them. It's a threat that needs to be dealt with. It's a threat to anyone who loves freedom, anyone who loves liberty, anyone who loves Christ, anyone who happens to be Jewish, anyone who wants to stay home on Sundays and doesn't want to get down and pray five times a day to Allah facing Mecca. Anyone that doesn't want to do that, you're in danger. And we need to wake up to that danger. James Foley will not be the last American. He will not be the last Westerner that we see beheaded over the course of the next several months. I wish that he would be. I pray right now for direct intervention. Knowing history and knowing the mindset of these people, I know it's not particularly likely. In fact, I would dare say that unless the rapture comes tomorrow, that James Foley will not be the last Westerner and probably not the last American that we will see beheaded by these monsters. These monsters that kill indiscriminately those that are not like them in the name of their God. In the performance of a faith that tells them the only guarantee into heaven is to martyr yourself in the name of Allah. These fanatics aren't afraid to get bombed. This is their way into heaven. This is their way to claim their prize of their virgins and their heavenly reward. The video was sickening. The death of James Foley is appalling. It's irreprehensible. And the action should be swift and justice should be served. But the statements of Barack Obama were too soft, too weak, and all Americans and all Westerners, all of our allies in liberty, were put at further jeopardy because of it. That's got to be it for tonight, folks. Thanks for listening. And again, don't take my word for it. Definitely, definitely don't take their word for it. Take a little time, do your own research, come to your own conclusions, use your brain, and always be prepared to put in a little bit of effort if you really want to tap into the truth. Good night, everybody.
I don't think I can say all I need to say. With the time left counting down by the day, it went going by, I don't know why time flies. It's a heartbreak, but it wasn't